A Watery Grave, written by Chris Holmes, narrated by Aaron Miller. Jonathan Barrett smiled as Millie entered the drawing room carrying a tray. Even the drab gray uniform couldn't hide her full breasts and shapely bottom.
"Your brandy, sir?"
She poured from a decanter and placed the full glass on the sideboard.
"Have the mob of pathetic mourners gone?" he asked.
"Yes, sir. Mrs. Fiddick sold the last to the door."
"Finally."
He untied his cravat and downed the brandy in one gulp. Removing his jacket, he tossed it over the open casket of his wife, Grace. The sleeve knocked one of the copper coins from her eyelids.
"I have a gift for you, sweet Millie."
He tugged the silk slippers from his wife's feet.
"To show my gratitude for your affections. In fact, all of her fine clothing and jewelry could be yours now." He gestured. "Come here."
"Here, Master Jonathan, in the presence of your wife?"
Gripping the girl around her slim waist, he pressed his mouth to hers and murmured,
"Dead eyes don't see."
On the day of Grace Barrett's funeral, sheets of rain fell from leaden gray skies. The horses pulling the carriage with her coffin slowly traversed the slippery hill leading to the cemetery. Jonathan stood at the gravesite, a lone figure beneath a black umbrella. In spite of the torrential rains, a large group of mourners gathered. Huddling beneath their umbrellas, they regarded Jonathan with covert glances and whispered behind their hands. Reverend Overton extolled Grace's virtues for over half an hour while Jonathan endured the windswept rain. The soles of his new leather boots sank deeper into the spongy ground with each minute the Reverend rambled on. Overton ended his eulogy with a prayer and then motioned to the crowd to come forward and pay their final respects. The procession of mourners slowly filed past the coffin. Each placed a white lily on the casket and then hurried off to the shelter of their waiting carriages. Grace's lady's maid, Mrs. Fiddick, stood watch over the casket. The cowl of her waxed wool cape covered her head and shielded her stern face and stony gaze. Rain pelted the coarse fabric, but it, much like the woman beneath, remained stiff and steadfast. Overton approached Jonathan, his hands outstretched.
"Mr. Barrett, may I offer my sincerest condolences on the loss of your dear wife, Grace. May the good Lord bless Grace and..."
"For your troubles, Reverend." Jonathan slapped a coin into the man's hand and waved him away.
He motioned to the two gravediggers standing under the leafy branches of a nearby oak.
"You two, come here."
Pulling their caps down, they slogged across the muddy grass.
"What are you waiting for?"
Jonathan pointed to Grace's casket.
"Get on with it, barrier!"
"Begging your pardon, sir."
Jasper dipped his head and touched the brim of his cap.
"The grave's filled with water."
"Aye, sir. Jasper's right,"
Willie said.
"It'd be disrespectful."
"Not to mention bad luck,"
Jasper muttered. Mrs. Fiddick glowered at Jonathan.
"If you had a scrap of decency, you'd have them move the lady's casket into the church and wait till the grave's dried."
"Meddlesome old cow,"
Jonathan pointed a gloved finger at the woman.
"I've had enough of your unsolicited opinions to last me a lifetime. Your services are no longer required. Pack your things and get the hell out of my house."
He turned his angry glare to the bewildered diggers.
"If you two won't, then I shall."
Dropping his umbrella, he gripped the side of the coffin and heaved his weight against it. The soggy edge of the freshly dug earth gave way. The coffin toppled sideways into the grave with a loud splash, drenching Mrs. Fiddick in a wave of brown water.
Dear God, she cried, the mistress was right. You truly are the devil incarnate.
Back at the house, Jonathan stripped off his waterlogged overcoat. Millie hung the heavy coat on a rack. He sat on a bench while she pulled off his mud-caked boots. Wiping her hands on her apron, she surveyed the muddied foyer floor and frowned.
I'll clean this up straight away, sir.
No. Have one of the other maids clean it. You have a new role here, remember?
He smiled as he wiped a smudge from Millie's cheek with his thumb.
Go up to my chambers and bathe. Then take your pick of the dressing gowns from the former mistress's wardrobe. I'll be up to join you after I attend to some business.
Jonathan headed into the sitting room. After selecting a bottle of the finest bourbon from the well-stocked bar, he continued on to the library. The storm raged on outside, with thunder so fierce the rumbling made the house shudder. The wind whipped rain against the windows. It sounded like pebbles striking the glass. He sat at Grace's desk, opened a leather-bound ledger, and studied a cargo list written in his deceased wife's neat script. She had inherited a small fleet of trading ships from her father, George Winston, after his untimely death. He smirked, remembering the insufferable old windbag and their ill-fated hunting trip. Winston had invited Jonathan along on a small game hunt under the guise of getting to know his daughter's suitor better. He waited until they had hiked well into the woods before revealing his true motive for the invitation.
Grace is a refined upper-class woman, much too good for the likes of a conniving ruffian like you.
His plump face flushed with anger, and his voice oozed contempt.
You will never marry my daughter, and you damn well will never get your filthy hands on 1 cent of my money.
He raised his rifle and aimed at Jonathan. When Jonathan didn't flinch, the old man grunted and swung the barrel to the left. Targeting a gray hair in the sights, he pulled the trigger. The gun backfired, blowing a sizable hole in the pompous old bastard's chest. Winston lay on the forest floor with blood gurgling from his mouth as he begged Jonathan for aid. Jonathan took his time strolling back to town to summon help. Although Constable Rourke interrogated him for hours, Jonathan never wavered from his story. He'd witnessed the rifle explode and saw the shell strike the elder man, mortally wounding him. After inspecting the firearm and finding a shell lodged in the barrel, the coroner ruled Winston's death an accident. A silver coin in a pint of ale had persuaded Winston's disgruntled whipper into wedging the shell into the barrel of the Winchester. Jonathan treated the man to several shots of whiskey at the local pub as a bonus for his deed. He later choked him to death in the alley behind the pub and retrieved his silver coin from the dead man's pocket. With Winston out of the way, Jonathan soon charmed the grief-stricken Grace into marrying him. It wasn't the first time he'd used his looks and silken words to manipulate a woman. Grace's homeliness made her even more susceptible to his flattery. His salacious compliments reduced the uncomely spinster to a blushing schoolgirl. The memory of her squinty eyes, piggish nose, and seemingly too many teeth in her mouth repulsed him. On the rare occasions she smiled, she reminded him of a braying horse. Soon after their nuptials, voluptuous young Millie caught Jonathan's eye. He visited Millie nightly in their quarters while Grace wept alone in their wedding bed. Jonathan made no secret of his repulsion towards his wife. Grace's pitiful tears evolved into remorse over her foolish decision to marry him. Then came her anger. She voiced her bitter hatred of him right up until the moment she died, with eyes bulging and mouth gasping as Jonathan's hands squeezed her throat until he silenced her pathetic whining forever. With Grace gone, ownership of the shipping business transferred to Jonathan. It had taken 2 long years to rid himself of Winston and his repugnant daughter, but the reward for his efforts would be a fortune beyond his dreams. He traced his fingers down the list of teas, spices, oils, silks, jewels, and porcelain ware the ships would soon deliver to him from across the sea. Demand for such exotic goods was exceedingly high, as were the prices several eager merchants pledged to pay him. Within the week, the ships would arrive and he would collect his long-awaited bounty. Giddy over his impending wealth, he lifted the bottle in a mock toast.
To you, my dear Grace, I am absolutely overjoyed that you're dead.
He laughed aloud and drank the whiskey straight from the bottle. Upstairs in the bathing room that adjoined the master's bedchamber, Millie stared in awe at the profusion of perfumed bath oils lining the former mistress's vanity table. A scullery maid poured the last pail of heated water into the footed tub. Millie unbuttoned her mud-stained uniform and let it fall to the floor. She slipped into the hot bath and rested her head against the smooth curve of the enamel rim. The decadent luxuries of her new role overwhelmed her. She smiled at her good fortune. Closing her eyes, she breathed in the rose-scented steam and tried to decide which of the mistress's fine silken nightgowns she would wear for the master. Jonathan drained the last drops of the bourbon from the bottle and then lumbered to the staircase. The mud had been cleaned from the foyer floor, but a curious track of watery footprints remained. The prints weren't from his boots, but appeared to be the delicate imprints of a woman's bare, wet feet. Had Millie come down from her bath to look for him? Aroused by the thought, he followed the footprints up the stairs and into his suite.
"Are you still bathing, my sweet?"
He unbuttoned his shirt as he walked.
"I believe I will join you."
Parting the curtains, he entered the bathing room and stared open-mouthed at the sight. Millie's lovely visage appeared magnified beneath the surface of the water, her full lips stretched into a horrified grimace, and her wide-open eyes stared blankly. Constable Rourke eyed Jonathan suspiciously while his men retrieved Millie's body from the cold water.
"How does a healthy young woman manage to drown herself in a bath?" he asked.
The coroner packed his instruments into his leather satchel.
"Did she have a weak heart or a propensity towards seizures?"
"I told you I don't know."
Jonathan sat slumped in an overstuffed chair in his bedchamber, watching as two policemen wrapped a coarse blanket around Millie's body and then carted the awkward bundle from the room. The gruesome discovery had instantly sobered him, yet left his mind muddled. The constable's presence irritated him. Rourke leaned down and studied Jonathan's face.
"You've admitted you had a bit to drink, and you've a reputation around the pubs for having quite a temper. I suspect you had an argument with young Millie, and in a drunken rage, held her under the water until she drowned."
Jonathan's anger spiked at the accusation.
"I did not drown poor Millie. Now leave my house at once." "This investigation's not over, Mr. Barrett."
Rourke glared at him and stalked out of the room. True to his word, the constable stopped by Jonathan's house every evening for the next week. The storms hadn't let up, and the sour-faced man dripped rainwater on the foyer floor as he repeated the same question at each visit.
"Are you ready to confess to the murder of young Millie O'Hare?"
Rourke asked.
"No, I'm not,"
Jonathan muttered through gritted teeth. I played no part in her death. Millie's sudden demise puzzled Jonathan as much as it did Rourke. He'd had a true fondness for the red-haired beauty and missed their passionate dalliances. Between the constable's nightly visits and the incessant rain beating against the windows, his nerves felt frazzled. He drank to numb himself, yet every room he settled in, water dripped from the tin-plated ceilings. He summoned his butler, Frederick, and told him to find workmen to repair the roof. The daily anxiety of waiting for his ships to arrive tested Jonathan's patience. Fed up with being imprisoned inside the somber old mansion, he decided to defy the foul weather and travel into town. He planned to drink his fill at the rowdy local pub and then spend the night in the brothel above it. Helping himself to a stack of bills from the cash box in Grace's desk drawer, he gathered his coat and hat and ordered the driver to ready the horse and carriage.
"Sir," Frederick cautioned, "it's not wise to travel in this storm."
A clap of thunder punctuated the butler's words. Jonathan dismissed his warning with an impatient wave of his hand. He opened his umbrella as he stepped outside, but it proved useless on the short walk from the front door to the waiting carriage. Wind-blown rain saturated his overcoat and blew the hat from his head. Climbing inside, he pulled the carriage door shut and mopped his face and hair with his handkerchief. The weeks of non-stop rain had washed away the hard-packed road and left a maze of muddy ruts and exposed rocks. The carriage swayed and lurched, jostling Jonathan from side to side. A mile from the house, a sudden jolt pitched him to the floor. The door's window suddenly appeared above his head. He struggled to stand and peered outside to get his bearings, but tree branches blocked his view. After some time of snapping and clearing away the branches, the driver pried open the carriage door.
"We lost a wheel, Master Barrett."
"Then repair it," Jonathan shouted.
"I can't, sir. The axle snapped. The carriage is on its side and sunk into the mud."
He helped Jonathan climb out of the fallen carriage.
"You can ride the horse, sir, to avoid the mud."
The driver unhitched the horse, but the frightened animal reared in panic at a sudden bang of thunder. It took off at a gallop back toward the stables. With no other resources, the driver and Jonathan trudged along the muddy road back to the house. The thick muck threatened to suck the boots from Jonathan's feet while heavy rain drenched his clothing. He opened his umbrella to get some respite from the chilling downpour. A gust of wind ripped it from his wet hands and sent it sailing into a dark stretch of woods. He arrived at the house, soaked to his skin and shivering. Frederick helped him remove his wet clothing and wrapped a blanket around Jonathan's shoulders. He ordered a maid to fill the master's tub, but Jonathan refused to bathe in the tub where Millie had died. He told Frederick to bring him a bottle of gin. Wrapped in a woolen blanket with bottle in hand, Jonathan retreated into the library. Ignoring the glass the butler had brought him, he tipped back the bottle and drank until his convulsive shivering subsided. Water dripped from the ceiling onto his head. Clutching the blanket and bottle, he moved to the divan on the other side of the room. Flashes of lightning illuminated the foliage, thrashing against the French doors. He feared any moment the branches would break through the glass. The next flash revealed a grinning, pale figure outside the window. Jonathan jumped from his seat and gaped at the ghostly woman with a horse-like grin. He rubbed his eyes and looked again, but the figure had vanished. Shaken by the apparition of his dead wife, he hurried towards his bedchambers. A set of watery footprints crossed the marble foyer and led up the staircase. He followed the prints upstairs.
"These footprints I keep seeing. It's you, isn't it, Grace?
You jealous, hateful bitch. No doubt you drown, my sweet Millie.
Pacing his chambers, he finished off the gin and hurled the empty bottle at the footed tub. Tiny shards of glass danced across the wooden floorboards. Exhausted and drunk, he fell onto the bed.
You've gotten your revenge on my sweet Millie, Grace. Now leave me be.
Early the following morning, a heavy pounding jarred Jonathan from his deep sleep. He pulled on a robe, walked to the top of the staircase, and yelled for Frederick. The old butler appeared at the foot of the staircase, impeccably dressed, as always, in a starched white shirt, black suit, and bow tie.
Good morning, Master Barrett.
What is that damnable racket?
The workmen repairing the roof as you ordered, sir,
Frederick said.
May I bring you some breakfast?
Bring me brandy, and send a man down to the docks to see if my fleet has arrived.
Jonathan returned to his chambers and dressed. Once the fleet arrived and he had his money, he'd sell this miserable house and buy an apartment in the city where he would live like a true gentleman of means. Frederick set a steaming plate on the dining table and refilled Jonathan's wine glass.
The workmen have completed the roof repairs, sir. They are requesting payment.
I cannot pay them until my fleet arrives. Besides, the roof still leaks. Bring them back and have them fix it properly.
I did, sir. They maintain the roof is sound and can find no source for the leaks inside the house. They will, however, not return again until they are fully compensated.
Jonathan sighed and took a drink of wine.
Did you send a man to the docks today?
Yes, sir. Today and every day for the past 2 weeks, as you'd ordered. No ships have docked yet, sir.
What the hell is keeping them? They're a month overdue.
Frederick shook his head.
These hellish storms do make for treacherous seas, sir. I'll send a man again tomorrow to check.
Jonathan stabbed his fork into a piece of roasted lamb.
At least that bastard Rourke has relented, he muttered. It's been 2 weeks since he's darkened my doorway with his suspicious stares and murderous accusations.
After dinner, Jonathan retired to the library along with his nightly bottle of whiskey. He positioned a chair between two steady drips of water from the ceiling. Frederick attempted to build a fire in the fireplace, but rain falling down the chimney doused the flames before they could fully ignite the damp wood. Instead of a warm, roaring fire, Jonathan endured a haze of dank-smelling smoke. Cold and drunk, Jonathan staggered into the foyer to make his way to his bed. It was the only dry sanctuary he had left in the house. As he walked, wet footprints materialized on the floor and continued up the stairs ahead of him. 2 months passed with no word about his ships. Jonathan took the last of the money from the cash box and gave it to Frederick. He instructed him to send a servant on foot into town to purchase liquor and cart it back to the house. The indulgent purchase left no funds to repair the carriage or pay the men for their work on the roof. Water now dripped from the ceilings in every room, soaking the furniture and rugs. With the exception of Frederick, all of the servants had left to find work in households that would pay them for their labor.
Master Barrett,
Frederick stood in the doorway of the library.
Constable Rourke is here. He wishes to speak with you, sir.
Slamming his bottle down on the desk, Jonathan rose from his chair. He steadied himself by holding on to the water-stained furniture as he made his way to the foyer. The constable, clad in an overcoat and hat, stood inside the front door. A puddle formed around his feet as he dripped rainwater and waited. Jonathan pointed a trembling finger at Rourke, his voice a drunken slur.
Are you here to falsely accuse me of Millie's death again?
Rourke gave him a smug smile.
No, Mr. Barrett. I'm here on other business this evening. We received a report the storm capsized your fleet several miles down the coast. All five ships were lost along with their crews and cargo. Waves over 20 feet tall bashed the ships to splinters on the jetties.
No, that can't be!
Jonathan staggered backwards and placed his hand on the wall to stay upright. He glared at the air above his head.
You did this!
He shouted.
Damn you to hell, Grace!
Pardon me, Mr. Barrett, Rourke asked.
Jonathan shook his head and mumbled a string of profanity. Rourke eyed him for a moment, then touched a finger to his hat and let himself out. The gravity of the constable's words took hold of Jonathan. His heart raced and his stomach felt hollow. The room spun in a dizzying blur. He clawed at the wall in a feeble attempt to stop his fall, but failed. He lay whimpering on the cold marble. Inches from his head, watery footprints appeared one by one and headed towards the stairs. The sound of approaching footsteps startled him. He struggled to sit up.
Have you come to kill me now?
His head swiveled from side to side, looking for Grace's eerie, grinning face.
Show yourself, you heartless bitch!
A hand reached down to assist Jonathan to his feet.
It's only I, Frederick, Master Barrett.
With the butler's help, Jonathan climbed to his feet. He leaned his back against the wall, still clutching the old man's arm.
May I get you anything before I take my leave, sir?
Leave? What do you mean? Where are you going?
Sir, I've stayed for as long as I can, but without wages...
You can't leave! You're the last! This damnable storm's destroyed all of my ships! The cargo is gone! All of it! Every precious thing's gone!
He gripped Frederick's hand.
I'll find a way to regain the fortune! I beg you, don't leave me alone in this cursed house!
Frederick gently extracted his hand from Jonathan's desperate grip.
An entire fleet swept away by this freakish storm is a terrible tragedy indeed.
He set his hat on his head and opened the front door.
I am sorry, sir.
Jonathan threw the last empty liquor bottle into the cold fireplace. The shattering of glass momentarily distracted him from the rain beating against the roof and windows. The relentless storms, along with water dripping from nearly every inch of the ceiling, tortured him. He stumbled into the kitchen and tore through the contents of the cabinets and drawers, tossing linens, dishes, and glassware to the floor in his frantic search. He finally found a small bottle of sherry in the pantry and gulped it down without taking a breath. Out of liquor, money, and servants, he staggered to the foyer. Wet footprints crossed the marble floor and left dark, wet stains leading up the carpeted stairs.
You're dead! I strangled the life out of you!
He screamed.
Why don't you stay dead?
He tripped on his way up the stairs. Too drunk to stand, he crawled the rest of the way to the second floor. The carpet felt wet and soaked the knees of his trousers.
This is your doing, Grace! You horse-faced demon! You destroyed my fleet! Killed Millie! Now you're trying to drive me mad!
He collapsed on the bed and shook his fist at the air.
But you will not prevail!
Tomorrow, he resolved, when he sobered, he would pack his few belongings and walk to the broker's office. Damn the rain and damn the mud. He refused to languish in this leaky sieve of a house for another day. Even in its present soggy state, the sale of the mansion should provide him enough money to escape this wretched town and its never-ending storms.
You are not best me, Grace. I hope you rot in hell.
His laughter echoed through the bedchamber. High-pitched shrieks and grunts that slowly devolved into gut-wrenching sobs. Constable Rourke looked across the bed at the coroner.
Cause of death?
He drowned.
Drowned? In his dry bed? And how'd he explain that?
The coroner backed away from the sopping wet corpse, shaking his head.
That's your job, Constable.
He nodded to the waiting policeman. One grabbed Jonathan's ankles and the other gripped him under the arms. They hoisted his sodden corpse from the bed and shuffled their way across the room and down the stairs. A gentle breeze swept the last of the dark clouds westward, revealing a pristine blue sky. The sun washed the cemetery in a pale golden light and warmed the dank, chilly air. Rows of headstones stood like granite sentries amidst the lush green grass and colorful patches of wildflowers.
Reverend said there's no service for this one,
Jasper said. Willie leaned his shovel against a headstone.
Well then, in he goes. Holes dug. We only need to set the ropes and lower the coffin.
Jasper peered into the deep hole.
A bit muddy down there, but no standing water.
Rain's finally stopped. I've never seen it rain for 2 months straight before.
Jasper lifted one end of the casket while Willie looped a thick length of rope around it. They moved to the other end and repeated the process.
This headstone's a crude-looking one, even for a pauper. Only J. Barrett chiseled on it. No date to epitaph.
Barrett? Ain't he the one who shoved his poor wife's coffin in the flooded grave?
Aye, I believe he is. Bad luck for him.
Jasper made the sign of the cross.
Everyone knows the dead will never rest in a watery grave.